Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what we're doing today?
Well, we've already finished 2 Maccabees.
Sure as fuck have.
Which means that today we're probably answering some things, doing some... What are we doing?
We're doing a Q&A. We're doing a Q&A, but not on Saturday.
Correct.
It's the final chapters of 2 Maccadoodles.
Yeah.
Chapters 11 through 15.
Okay. And we did have a lot of questions.
We did.
Because like, there was a lot of names and a lot of things going on that we didn't quite understand. So
yeah.
I'm kind of looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All right. But we're this much closer to wrapping up and getting into the New Testament, too.
Which I know Fern is very excited about.
Well, speaking of which.
All Fern can talk about is the only thing Fern will say is, but are we there yet?
Speaking of which, we're doing this live on Discord.
Where Fern is letting me know how much they cannot wait till we start the New Testament.
Okay. So... Yes, but if you would like, you should join us on Discord as well.
So you could be with Fern and tell wife how much wife is wasting time and not getting there.
Okay.
Right?
10 p.m. Eastern on Discord.
Every Tuesday.
No, that's probably going to be changing. We just talked about this. It's probably going to end up... We're probably going to be doing Sundays. I don't know what time yet.
We'll get back to you.
You know, get back. Check out the website and do the things and join us on Discord and we'll tell you.
Yeah,
we'll get back to you. Because those are the things that are happening. But you should join us because it's fun. And then wife might go off about you on, you know, our podcast. Like she just did.
Like I just did.
Yeah. So.
And then it throws husband off and he just stares at me blankly.
That's pretty much what happened.
Because we're unscripted. And so he's like, I don't know what to say now.
Right.
And his face is blank panic.
All right, so this is 2 Maccabees, chapters 11 through 15.
Q&A. Not on Saturday.
All right, let's do this.
Okie dokie. All right, we are finishing off the 2 Maccadoodles, which is the Maccadoodliest of all the doodles.
It sure the fuck is.
And I'm very excited about this because this episode ends it. It's done.
Although, well, not really.
We do have not to do really. A mecca.
Yeah. I was going to say
a mecca wrap up.
We're still, yeah. You can't say that because then that indicates we'd be in the New Testament the next time.
I know. So. All right, but I am going to say this. I'm going to do a one episode mecca doodle wrap up, and it's going to talk about both of the doodles and the what is it called when you're always wrong? You're always wrong. That one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, so that's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to do it all in one.
Okay.
And that way, so that's going to be the last Maccadoodles. And then the one after that, that'll be where we start talking about the New Testament.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Are you good with that?
I'm good with that.
Okay. So, chapters 11 through 15, what the fuck?
I don't even know.
I mean, there was wars, but there's always wars.
Right.
So chapter 11. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's do it.
That one was called Judas Maccabeus's campaigns.
Okay.
Because he did some campaigning.
Yeah.
Not like political campaigning where he goes door to door and hopes you vote for him. It's his war machine campaigns.
Yeah, where he goes door to door and kills people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Chapter 11 describes Judas and his brothers continuing their military campaigns to free Judea from Seleucid control. So sure. They're trying to get out from under the Greeks.
I mean, that's one way to put it. They also, when they had the opportunity, tried to expand their borders.
Yes.
And were very wary.
But this is yes and no. Like, that's a little bit later. That's in one of the next chapters, I think. Okay. Chapter 12.
Well, whatever.
In chapter 11, they're still under Salacid control.
I got it. I'm just saying they like to present themselves as these righteous people who are defending their homeland and all this. But then they're like, no, but then let's go kill other people.
Right. But in chapter 11, they are still under Salacid control. And sure. So they're being forced to give up their Jewish ways, their Jewish traditions. They're not allowed to practice any of their practices.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Greeks are still controlling their daily life. Right. So it's not that you're wrong. It's just that we're not there yet. Okay. That's chapter 12.
Okay.
Okay. So in chapter 11, they're like, fuck the Greeks.
Yeah.
Okay. So Judas fights at Emmaus in the first verse. And then he fights at Gezer and other towns.
Okay.
And the Seleucid general Gorgias.
Yeah.
Like, remember, I couldn't remember how to say his name, it's...
This is forever Gorgias now.
He's forever Gorgias. yeah. I want to say it's like Gorgias or something like that.
Sure.
But Gorgias is just so much more fun.
Right.
So he's the Greek general, and he attempts to ambush Judas with 9,000 troops.
It's so weak because later they come at them with like 120,000 and then 110,000.
Right.
9,000. Fuck. What the fuck even is that?
And he gets defeated.
Like, it's nothing.
Now, I did read a note that said that all of these large, several tens of thousands of fighters.
Yeah.
Is way ridiculous. Like, obviously ridiculous, over the top. Because there's no way they could even fed that many.
Right.
So there was no way to control that many.
It seemed ridiculous to me, too. Yeah. Like, I was like, there's no fucking way.
There probably weren't even that many people, like, alive at that time. At least not many that, like, felt under the same, like, yeah, I'll be a soldier for you.
Right.
Sure, that sounds great.
Yeah.
So a military expedition to Judea was led by the regent Lysias, who was the guardian of young King Antiochus V.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So we've got...
Antiochus Eupator, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, that is correct. So we've got the Seleucid general Gorgias, and then we've got King Antiochus V and his regent Lysias.
Sure.
Okay. And Judas and the Jews pray to God for deliverance and for him to send an angel to defend Israel.
Yeah.
And that happened.
According to the book, it sure the fuck did. Yeah.
Sure. A mysterious horseman in white garments and golden weapons appears near Jerusalem to aid Judas's army. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Battle of Beth-Zur is a result of all this.
Okay.
The Maccabees and their heavenly ally, they win a resounding battle.
Of course, because God's on their side. And,
because,
you know,
gold beats not gold.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And
wait, we're not even to the golden sword yet, are we? That's later.
Well, no, but he's dressed in gold. He has golden weapons.
That's right.
A mysterious horseman in white garments and golden weapons. That's
right. I forgot
We had two golds. This is a guy dressed in white with gold weapons. He appeared.
Right.
Did you get that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a mysterious horseman in white garments and golden weapons.
Okay.
He appears. So, of course, the Maccabees and their heavenly ally win in a resounding victory.
Yeah.
Okay. Lysias and his expedition are forced to shamefully retreat. They're like, oh, if only we had Yahweh on our side.
Right.
Look, that guy's so cool. I love that God, man. If only he was like our God. That's totally what they were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe that in no way whatsoever.
So as they're backing off, Judas is capturing strategic towns and he's purging pagan altars. He's restoring Jewish worship according to law. Like, he's going all over the place. Spreading
Jewish worship?
Yeah.
I think you said Jewish worship.
I did because I made a mistake.
Right,
yeah. I slurred.
I was just making sure.
I was hoping that you would not catch my slurr.
Got it.
But you did catch it because you're an asshole.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he restores Jewish worship according to Jewish law.
Okay.
So he's going around like, yeah, Judaism is awesome. Be a Jew. It's so great. We get a golden angel guy, and we get to beat all of those Greek guys. Yay! Sure. So Lysias, not being a fool, he realizes that the Hebrews are invincible.
Hold on. I got to stop you right there. And the reason being, because like we've talked about the Jewish folks losing in battles before, right? Yeah. And they always blame themselves for not worshiping their own God enough, right?
We suck so hard.
What makes you think it would be any different for any other culture? Like, why would they embody the ideals of this other God instead of taking upon themselves their failure to meet their own God's expectations?
That's kind of one of the differences, though. The Jewish people, they're so ready to blame themselves all the time. Like, they walk around in constant defeat, pre-programmed to accept whatever they've done wrong because they've been brainwashed into believing that everything is their fault anyway.
But I just don't buy the fact that there's these other cultures out there going, man, that God is so awesome. He beat us. That's not what's happening. They're seeing the loss from their own perspective. Hearing about it from a Jewish perspective, sure, where they're putting their own thoughts and ideas into these people. And
yes, but also they have some of their own records. We have seen some of their own records, and some of their own records do indicate that they were like, man, we lost. That sucks for us.
Well, sure.
But they're not like either our God failed us because we suck, nor are they like, man, their God is so strong. They're just like, battle, we lost the battle, man.
No, I mean, I imagine it would be much like losing a battle today. You know, you don't, if God didn't show up, which, let's be honest, God didn't show up, okay? Like, that's not real.
Obvious.
You're just going to be like, man, that sucked, we lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's how that goes.
Right.
It's people, after the fact, injecting God into these battles mm-hmm. for the sake of their religion to make it sound more holy or whatever the fuck they want to make it sound like, that's causing these things to come up in the book.
So. Are you telling me you don't think that Jesus is very excited about Artemis going around the moon?
We talked about this a little bit on the live Discord, but like I was a little distraught.
Disturbed and distraught.
And look, I haven't been paying enough attention to know all the ins and outs, but there was like there was a quote from the guy that's running, that's the captain or whatever,
the astronaut captain guy.
And he was like doing a Jesus quote, and then
Jesus
it came back
is
to
awesome and great and likes it that we're going around the moon.
And then it came back to the NASA headquarters, and the person that was speaking there also did like a gaudy Jesus quote type thing. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? This is science. Stop talking about Jesus and God.
And see, I hear that. And like what I pointed out was their whole, all the money that they get, all of their funding depends on the crazy fucks that are in charge of the government right now. And those guys are crazy Christians. And so they're like, yes, praise Jesus. Can NASA have your dollars so that we can do science? Big science, because in praise of God. Because God loves science and discovering things. But in the glory of God, God in glory and God in Jesus and God.
But there's so much amazing shit in science that it stands on its own legs.
It does.
You know?
Like, I agree with
we
you.
We don't need the extra bullshit thrown in.
You're not saying anything that's not true, but you're also not being realistic.
And let's be honest, the fucking astrophysicists and all the whatever, whoever the fuck writes all the code and the plans all the shit, and it's probably AI now, but whatever.
All the maths and stuff.
They're the ones that got these people there. It wasn't God.
It's not.
It's math.
I don't disagree
with you. It was fucking
math. I don't disagree with you. And I'm sure that like at least 80% of the scientists and astronauts and astrophysicists and all them guys, I'm sure that at least 80% of NASA agrees with you. I also think that they are in the program and see the bigger picture, which is we don't have to believe what we're saying. We just have to, you know, say it because we're not going to throw ourselves into the fire. We're going to eat the fucking bacon. They're not being the son of the Jewish woman right now. They are eating the bacon so that they can get the money. Do you understand what I'm referencing?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Sometimes you have to be like, yes, I totally love Jesus. He is awesome. Thank you for funding NASA.
But it's just such a turnoff. Instead, like, you know,
it's sad.
Giant step for mankind, you know, that's you're bringing humanity as a whole, which they did some of that too. like they tried to bring us and they tried to put into perspective the entire world mm-hmm. when they were talking too. So there were some good things that were said, but it was also couched in a religious tone at some level too. And I was just like, could we just, if we just left that off and just made humanity one group that's working together to be better,
that would be so awesome.
Much more overall, and that accepts everybody, that allows everybody to participate.
But you're speaking as a humanist and a humanitarian, and if people were more humanist and humanitarian, we wouldn't be where we are politically right now anyway. It would make the whole conversation move.
Well, like, yeah.
The fact that there is Jesus in our NASA is, like, that is the problem. The problem is the problem. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but that's why I was saying something about it.
But you, no, and I totally get it. Like, I agree with you. I don't disagree with you. All I'm saying is, but I can also see why they did what they did and said what they said.
Yeah, it's just like, I take issue with it on many levels. Like, if you are coming out of surgery and the surgeon's there and like, yeah, you pulled through, and the person immediately is like, oh, thank God. Like, no, thank
the surgeon
that just fucking got you through the surgery, because literally they got you through this.
No, totally. I totally agree.
Whatever. It's this whole attributing things to people that attributing things to a thing that doesn't really do the thing that you said. You know what I'm saying?
It takes away from the glory of the people and their accomplishments.
Yeah.
No, totally agree.
Yeah, that surgeon did an amazing thing for you.
Mm-hmm. Because of God. That's what they would say. So anyways, Lysias.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He is like, oh, this sucks. So not being a fool, he realizes that the Hebrews are invincible because their God is so cool. Right.
Yeah.
And also because they keep winning. Whether their God is cool or not, the Jews keep winning.
Sure.
So he's like, fuck me. So he negotiates to end hostilities. Okay. And this chapter ends in four different letters that show that's happened.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these documents are pretty much historically accurate. History says they exist.
I think they kind of covered them in the first Maccabees too, which kind of lends credence to this.
Yes. They detail negotiations with Lysias and the Roman Republic, and they are dated to about 163 to 161 BCE. So that gives us an idea of not just when these letters were written, but when this book was actually compiled.
Yeah.
And put together. The 160s is where we've settled.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
BCEs.
Sure.
So that gets us closer to the zero line of the Jesus years.
Okay.
Okay. So Second Maccabees is about as close as we can get, like, accurately.
So these were written around the same time that this was happening?
No, but it was compiled. The letters were written as it was happening, yes. And then the book was compiled shortly thereafter.
I see. So, okay. So in reality, because they changed the way that they reference time in Maccabees specifically.
Yeah.
So like when you're saying 160 that it is 100, like that's the same time frame, but it's not, because it was more like 300 or two.
No,
like
I've already accounted for that change. When I say 160 BCE, I'm actually saying 160 BCE is when these letters are dated to.
Got it. So, okay. The letters are, okay.
The letters were written in about 160 to 160, like 163 to 161 BCE.
I guess what I'm asking, did you find out when, like, approximately they think that Second Maccabees was written?
No, actually, I'm going to, yes and no. I started to go down that rabbit hole when I was looking at the date of this letter.
Yeah.
But remember, I am going to be covering all the Maccadoodles.
Okay.
And so we're going to cover that time period and authorship and stuff in our next episode.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Right now, I don't want to get lost in the weeds. We're talking about chapter 11 and these letters.
Sure.
And these letters were written 163 to 161 BCE. Okay?
Okay.
Not SE, which would be 163 years after the Babylonian exile.
Right.
Okay, that's the time period that you're thinking of. Okay?
Okay.
Like, when we say SE, that's the, like, rather than AD or BC. S, the letter S, E, like S for salicylated, and I forget what the E stands for.
Okay.
But that meant so many years after the Babylonian exile. Okay. Remember that?
Yeah.
We had a whole thing about that.
Kind of, yeah.
That's what you're kind of getting this confused with.
Okay.
Okay. We're not talking about with regard to so many years after the Babylonian exile. We're not talking about that. We're talking about period the end BCE, 160 BCE.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
Are you with me?
Yes.
Okay. So the four letters in this chapter are not in chronological order. And the first, third, and fourth documents are separate from the second one. Okay?
Okay.
Actually, I did kind of mix myself up there. Sorry. The first, third, and fourth documents are dated to 148 SE, which that's the 148 years after the Babylonian exile.
Okay.
And that would be equivalent to 165 to 164 BCE.
Okay.
And then the second document, it's undated, but it's written on Antiochus V's behalf.
Okay.
You know, he's like the kid.
Yeah.
So that suggests that's where I got the date of 163 to 161 BCE. So all of these were written in the 160 BCEs.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Around that time frame. Got it. That 10-year, that decade, okay?
Sure.
Okay. So this chapter, chapter 11 of 2 Maccabees, overlaps and aligns with 1 Maccabees chapters 5 and 6, where Judas campaigns and he purges the pagan sites and he describes all that.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives us some overlap there. Okay?
Okay.
The Emmaus ambush is also mentioned in 1 Maccabees. In chapter 6.
Okay.
Okay. So now we're moving on to chapter 12. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Chapter 12 is about Judas's army and religious observance. So we've won, right? Yay, we've won the war.
Sure. Okay? But they've never won the war, but okay.
I mean, they always win for like 5 seconds.
Right.
They're awesome. Their God is great. And then they do bad.
Yeah.
So yay, we're on top of the world. Chapter 12 discusses the struggles between the Jews and their neighbors in the greater Palestine region.
Okay.
Okay. This is the part where you were talking about how it's more like they were trying to expand their territory. Sure. Yes, exactly. The coastal city of Joppa lures the local Jews onto boats and then sinks them, killing about 200 people.
Yeah.
And by people, we mean the wives and children.
Right.
Like, let's be specific. And it wasn't just people. I specifically remember it was the wives and children.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Judas infiltrates the city at night, sets fire to the port and its boats, and he kills some locals to take revenge for the atrocity, because that is godlike. We love us vengeance, don't
we? Right, right.
Judas then burns the boats at Jamnia as a reprisal for a similar anti-Jewish incident.
Okay.
So Judas is all over the place. He's going to all these other little towns.
Yeah.
And he's like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and fuck you. Okay. More accounts of the campaigns in outlying regions gets described vaguely against Timothy, Gorgias, and other people. And this is all supposed to have taken place about 163 BCE.
Okay.
Okay. So after their victory, Judas's army collects the spoils and they pray for fallen soldiers. And that's one of the first times that we kind of see that, where they're praying for their dead, which right. is interesting.
Yeah.
And Judas pays atonement for soldiers who had died with idolatry or sin, showing early Jewish practices of praying for their dead. Like, not just praying for, but also paying atonement for.
Right.
And that, like, goes way back to, like, early Old Testament stuff.
Right.
Like, that whole paying for, like, atonement fees. Do you remember all those early sin? I forgot what they're called. Like, sin fees. I forgot what the word was. Like, the atonement and the sin and the... And they had ones for wheat and one for all the sacrifice.
Sacrifices?
Yeah. Yeah. All the sacrifices.
All right.
Yeah.
Sin offering?
Yeah. Sin offering. Offerings. That's the word. Yeah. Yeah. This is like they do an atonement offering for their dead. And like they haven't done that in ages.
Right.
So this is interesting.
Got it.
And here we see an emphasis on obedience to Mosaic law and proper worship. So, yeah, that's what I said. It goes way back to early days.
Yeah.
Okay. So, with regard to how it overlaps with 1 Maccabees, this chapter is unique to 2 Maccabees. We didn't see this in 1 Maccabees. 1 Maccabees chapters 3 through 6 does not mention prayers for the dead.
Okay.
Which, again, that's really interesting that we're, like, going back to, like, the start.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're like, let's get real Jewish here. Let's get old school Jewish.
Well, every time things get, you know, every time there's death and then
every time we got to rally the crowds.
They go back. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It reflects Jewish law principles seen in the Torah in Numbers and Deuteronomy regarding sin and atonement.
Got it.
Okay, so now we move on to chapter 13, which is about Judas's death and funeral.
Okay.
So Lysias, remember he's the regent for Kid Antiochus.
Yeah.
Lysias orders the execution of unpopular high priest Menelaus. Remember okay. Menelaus?
Yeah.
Okay. Judas harries Lysias' expedition with minor victories. Lysias leaves and returns to the capital of Antioch to face the usurper Philip. And this is all around 163 to 162 BCE, likely near the time to the Battle of Beth Zechariah.
Okay.
Sorry. Described in 1 Maccabees. Okay.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of confusion in the 2 Maccabees timeline because the author, whoever it was, whatever priest guy wrote or compiled this,
yeah,
he sometimes crams two separate battles into one, like the Beth Zura battle.
Sure.
It's not certain whether he's talking about the first one or the second one, or he's conflating it all into one battle. But sure. There were two.
Okay.
So it's kind of confusing.
Yeah. Which lends to the idea that it was probably written much later mm-hmm. than... Yep. During this time frame.
So. Yeah, yeah. So Judas Maccabeus dies in battle against Bacchides. Bach, Bach, Bach. Who is a Seleucid general during an encounter in Gilead.
That's weird. I hardly remember that. I feel like Judas was with us the whole time through all the rest of the battles here.
But that's because we're at chapter 13. There's only two chapters left okay. after this.
All right.
I can't believe you didn't even look at me when I went back, back, back. Like, you're so used to my weird noises that
they don't
faze you. Yeah. I have to point them out.
Right.
Okay, so when Judas dies, his body is taken to Modin and is buried with honor.
Okay.
His death deeply affects the Jewish people, but the revolt continues under his brothers.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's kind of it for that chapter.
Okay.
There's a little bit of overlap with 1 Maccabees. It matches chapter 9, which also describes Judas's death and burial at Modin.
Got it.
Okay. But then that's it. So we move on to chapter 14, which is about peace and political negotiations. Negotiations?
Negotiations.
Like suddenly that word, I've never said it before in my entire life. All right. So in this chapter, Demetrius I becomes king. Alcimus, who had replaced Menelaus as the high priest, is affirmed by Demetrius I.
Right.
So that's who the king was. Remember, we're like, who's the fucking king? What the fuck? Right. It was
Demetrius. Right.
Okay. And Alcimus is now the high priest.
Sort of.
Albus Dumbledore.
Sort of.
Yeah. So Nicanor is appointed governor of Judea.
Right.
So we've got all these puppet leaders. Okay.
Yeah.
Nicanor and Judas enter negotiations for peace, but are subverted by Alcimus, who complains to the king because he does not like them buddying up.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, they got buddy-buddy, and Alcimus didn't like that.
Yeah. Albus was like, excuse y'all, you are not to be friends. I do not like it.
Right.
And also, why wasn't I part of the group chat?
Right.
That, I think that's what it was. He was just sad because he didn't get invited to the barbecues.
Right.
So he complains to the king. Alcimus complains to the king. And then Judas's arrest is ordered. a Seleucid. Oh, that's also why, because you're like, wait, he just died. Judas died in the last chapter. Yeah. What the fuck? So these are out of order.
Right.
So that's another reason.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I thought Judas was there the rest of the fucking time.
So. Yeah. So he died, but yeah, then we're going back in time.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
He died in 13, but then we're talking about 14, where he's still alive.
That's really weird.
It's the way these go.
Okay.
It's like they're not chronological. They're just different stories.
Got it.
Like chapter 13 is like, remember this battle? That's when he died. And then chapter 14 is like, remember that battle?
Where he was still alive?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So...
Again, I feel like whoever compiled this did it wrong.
I mean, they did the whole book wrong.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Right.
Whoever compiled all the compilations.
Which is the entire Bible.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So the Seleucid general Bacchides negotiates a temporary peace with the Jews. Bacchides withdraws and Jews have religious freedom, but only temporarily. Mm. And then some Jews are bribed to accept Seleucid authority, but faithful resistance continues.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
This chapter mostly takes place in Judea, but some of the towns surrounding it that are under Seleucid influence are mentioned.
Yeah.
And this chapter overlaps with 1 Maccabees chapters 9 and 10, where Bacchides' campaign and temporary truces are described.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that's it for chapter 14.
Okay.
Okay? All right. Now we move into chapter 15, and we get the continued struggle and martyrdom stories. And then at the end of the chapter, we also get this weird little epilogue.
Okay. Yeah, that was fucking...
Yes.
So weird.
Right? Yeah, I have a note about that. Okay. But that's just like the last two verses. Okay. We're not going to talk about those yet.
Okay.
We're just going to talk about the bulk of the chapter. Chapter 15 is mostly about the continued struggle and martyrdom stories. So Nicanor threatens to destroy the temple. And in a dream vision, Onias III and the prophet Jeremiah give Judas a divine golden sword. That's where you got your golden weaponry from.
Yeah.
Okay. At the Battle of Edessa, Judas defeats and kills Nicanor, preserving the sanctity of the temple. And the Day of Nicanor Festival is established. Yay!
Yeah, that's where we put severed heads in our yards.
Yeah, and giant and hands.
Yeah.
And that was about 161 BCE.
Right.
Okay.
You guys all celebrate Nicanor Day, right?
Totally.
With severed heads in your yard?
Yeah. Especially if you're Jewish, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah. So Seleucid oppression continues under the generals like Nicanor, who does try, of course, to destroy the Jewish people because he's a villain. He's bad, bad, bad.
Right.
The Jews demonstrate courage and piety, and some are martyred rather than betray their faith. And this chapter highlights the theme of divine justice and miraculous deliverance. Because, you know, they get their magic sword.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of martyrs in this chapter, but they go unnamed. So they're just unnamed Jews who remain faithful. Okay. As that's what martyr means.
Right. Well, there was the one guy, what's his name? The guy that had his bowels out. That was, I think, in 14 or something.
That was in 14.
But yeah, they named him.
Well, yeah, but he wasn't in chapter 15.
Right.
That's why.
That was a crazy story.
That was a crazy fucking story.
Yeah.
That was a ridiculous, crazy story.
Yeah.
So here's where this chapter overlaps with 1 Maccabees. Okay. This bit is mentioned in 1 Maccabees chapter 7, where Nicanor's defeat is described. But then martyrology and divine intervention are emphasized way more in 2 Maccabees because... Let's not forget that 1 Maccabees was just a straightforward military account. It was so boring.
Yeah.
And it was like, and then this, and this, and this. And it was like run-on sentences, and he did this to him over there with those. And we're like, what even did you just say?
Right.
All right. Now we get to the epitomous epilogue. Okay?
Okay.
Verses 37 through 39 are a brief statement from the epitomist, which I just love that word. He wrote the epilogue.
Yeah, he did.
Concluding the history.
Sure as fuck wasn't God.
No. No. It was a dude. Okay. And he wrote this concluding the history, expressing his hope that the reader enjoys the work and apologizing if the reader didn't.
Yeah. Really fucking weird.
It really reminded me of Puck at the end of A Midsummer Night's Dream when he's like saying, I hope that you liked this and were insulted by the story, but if you were, just remember it was done in jest and it was me. Don't blame them. I'm the one that did it. Sorry.
Right,
and can't we just depart as friends?
Sure.
Right? That's what this reminded me of. I'm like, oh my God, are you Puck? Like, that's so cute.
But it doesn't sit well in the Bible.
And there's a lot of people that take issue with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can imagine.
So the author apparently did not consider whatever happened in Jerusalem after Judas's defeat as sufficiently bad to contradict this statement, okay? Or he was referring only to the temple sanctuary rather than the city as a whole, or he did not intend to extend the claim beyond Nicanor's death, okay?
Okay.
Because he just stopped, like, right at Nicanor's death. And he's like, and the end, and hope you like that story. So there's, like, a lot of, like, whoa, what the fuck? Okay, verse 37 suggests that 2 Maccabees was unlikely to have been written after 63 BCE. 63 BCE, not 163 BCE.
Right.
63.
Right.
We're getting real close to the zero line now.
Yeah.
When the Hasmonean kingdom was reduced to client state status to the Roman Republic.
Okay.
So it had to have been written way prior to that.
Yeah, so there was a big gap in time between when this happened versus when it was written,
right?
Which is why we have a lot of...
So sometime between 160 and 60 BCE. So there's like a 100-year period.
Right.
Okay? When this could have been written. Because 160 is when those letters were... I feel like it would have been
closer to the 60.
Closer to the 60.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... if 2 Maccabees was intended as a quote-unquote festival book, meaning, you know, to read at festivals and stuff, or to, like, encourage the people to rally them, you know?
Yeah.
To be used as reading material during Nicanor's Day or Hanukkah, the establishment of the festival itself may have been just a logical stopping point of the text, because that is literally where it stops.
Got it. Okay.
So that may have been its intended purpose.
Sure. That makes sense.
So, getting back to, though, the... I'm sorry, you're apologizing for what you wrote, and people might not like it? Hold on. So, John Calvin, right? He was a French theologian, pastor, and reformer in Geneva during the Protestant Reformation, okay? He was the principal figure in the development of the system of Christian theology, later called Calvinism.
Okay.
So, you know, Calvinism, right? Including its doctrines of predestination and of God's absolute sovereignty in the salvation of the human soul from death and eternal damnation. Like, Calvinism is like hardcore Protestant, right? Like, to the max.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So he used the epilogue to argue in favor of the decanonicalization. Like, he did not want this to be canon.
Okay. Got it. Okay, yeah.
He wanted to
get
this shit out of my Bible. He wanted this decanonized during the Protestant Reformation. And he wrote, quote, "He who confesses that his writings stand in need of pardon certainly proclaims that they are not oracles of the Holy fucking Spirit." Okay. Now, I added the F-bomb, but I think it fits the tone of what he's saying.
Right.
He's like, if you are apologizing for what you're writing, like, hope you liked that, but if not, sorry. Then
that's just not strong enough. You got no place.
See, whereas I could make an argument for, I hope you like it. If you didn't, sorry, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. I'm just telling you what God said. Like, it could go either way. But Calvin was like, nah, dog. If God wrote it, it's perfect and great.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you like it or not. It's right.
He took that as proof that this was not God's word.
Obviously, man-made. We don't need this in our book.
Right.
Get it out.
Yeah.
So the epilogue makes... This is just a side note. This is just an interesting side note, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, not pertinent to any of the stories herein or the chapters themselves.
Right.
But the epilogue makes an analogy to how water alone and wine alone are worse than drinking water mixed with wine. And the common practice in that era when wine was stored in a very potent form for efficient transit. So it would be like, what's it called? Concentrated. So they had concentrated wine, right? That you would have to water down to make it drinkable.
Sure.
Okay. So water by itself, ooh, gross. This concentrated wine, ooh, gross. Right. But you mix them together.
Got it.
And then they're perfect. Yay. Right.
Yeah.
The only question was, what are you comparing this to? Like, are you saying that yours is the watered down version of a more perfect, like the wine?
Right.
Like, and would the wine have, the question is, you know how there was that Jason guy who wrote that book? And I always kept saying, haha, Jason and the Argonauts. And you were like, who's that? And then I had to explain fucking Greek drama to you, Jason and the Argonauts, but yes. It's not even relevant because that's not the Jason in question. But there was some Jason that wrote history. That guy, that Jason, remember?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that Jason had this history. And so there's a question about whether his version would have been the wine because it was more complete. And then, so would second Macadoodles be like the watered down version?
I gotta admit, you kind of lost me there.
Okay, so
like, Jason the Argonauts and water and wine and
okay, let me start
I'm,
over.
I'm like, I have no idea what you just said. Okay, honestly,
let me start over. So there's this historian guy named Jason.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
He wrote a bunch of histories.
Yeah.
Okay. Just forget everything else I said about him.
Sure.
I've talked about him before.
Okay.
Do you remember me talking about him before, Jason the historian guy?
Possibly.
So, no. Okay, so anyway, starting over from scratch, there's this historian guy named Jason.
Yeah.
Okay? That apparently you've never heard of, even though I've mentioned him more than once.
Okay.
So there's this historian guy named Jason, and he wrote a history of all this shit. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And apparently his was really great, right? His history was great. It was awesome. And so then this guy that wrote the epilogue of Second Maccabees.
Yeah.
He's saying wine alone, yucky. Water alone, yucky. But water and wine together is great. Yay. So then the question would be, are you referring to your thing as the water and Jason as the wine?
Okay.
Did you follow that? You look
a little,
really
a little
confused.
Bit. I suppose, yeah.
Okay.
We're good, though. We're good.
Okay. Like, I can't break it down any further than that.
No, you're fine. I'm just...
There's only three verses where he's, like, saying this thing about the water and the wine.
Okay.
Anyway, there was a Greek cultural belief that only Dionysus himself could drink unmixed wine without going crazy. Like, you had to water it down.
Got it.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
So, this maybe would be the watered-down version of something better? Question mark. And could that be Jason's version? Question mark. Who knows? What exactly the water and wine correspond to is less clear, and even more so for you. The
Very
end.
Much so, yeah.
So that's it. Okay?
Okay.
That's chapters 11 through 15 of Second Maccabees. And what we have here for overall themes in these five chapters is military victories intertwined with religious devotion, leadership transition from Judas to Simon, which we didn't really hear much about in these chapters. We heard more about that in the military history in First Maccabees, I think, right?
Yeah.
And then divine justice and prayers for the dead, which was really unique to Second Maccabees, which we already talked about, but still very interesting to point out again. And then we've got martyrdom and faithfulness as central motifs in these chapters. Okay? Right.
Okay.
And then that's it. So now we're done with those five chapters. And next time we will get into all the Macadoodles and the You're Always Wrong.
I am not. I am not. I am.
You are always not. Wrong. You are. Like, it's not even a question.
All right. All right. Well, that was our Q&A for today, mm-hmm. for chapters 11 through 15 of Second Maccabees. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And next time we'll be back with the contradictions.
Yeah.
Okay. And the I'm always wrong. So, mm-hmm. Okay. Perfect. Well, we will see you next time.
You still look so confused.
I am. I really am.
I mean, that's
okay. It's recorded, so if I really want to, I can go back and listen to it over and over and over and over again.
That is
if
true.
If I really want to.
If you really wanted to. I don't think you want to, though.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, wife. I guess that's the end.
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.